My name is Richard Lamparski, and today we're going to find out whatever became of David Harum. And his name is Cameron Prudhomme. And you must tell us where we are, because we've driven such a long way, I've lost track.
We're at Greenwood Lake in northwestern New Jersey. The lake is about 10 miles long. Good fishing. I fish there.
In case some of you are too young to remember the golden days of radio and a soap opera by the name of David Harum, you would remember Mr. Cameron Prudhomme for his many appearances on the stage and in motion pictures. I just asked him if he did the motion picture version of... what did they call the movies? The Rainmaker, that's right. I was thinking of the musical version, and he said yes, and he was on Broadway, too. And what was the other thing you did with it?
I did the TV show. Originally was a TV show.
Yes, yeah, see, I remember it. Made quite a hit.
That's right.
And then they did the musical, 110 in the Shade. Did you see that?
No, I didn't see that. I missed that one.
Well, I didn't miss much. I saw that. The others were much better. Yeah. Mr. Prudhomme tells me he started where he was born, which was San Francisco. How'd you get in theater in there?
Well, I just loved the theater and wanted to get into it. My father wanted me to be a writer, and I did some writing. And then I was a salesman and a few other things, and then finally I just went into theater because I loved it.
How long were you David Harum?
About 6.5 years, I think. I was the third, but I think I played it longer than anyone else. And a very interesting thing, when I came up here first in around 44 to fish, the man I kept my boat with couldn't pronounce my name. But someone recognized my voice and knew I'd played David Harum. So he called me David Harum. And it sticks to this very day. The neighbors around here call me Dave. And the man right next door here, he used to live there, said, oh, he'd call me Mr. Harum. And I'd say, that's not my name. It's Cameron Prudhomme. Still call me David Harum. And my daughter first came up to visit me. And people would pass, say, hello, Dave. And I said, what's this Dave business? And it still sticks right today.
Well, that's not a bad character to be, because I remember him... David Harum was originally, I think, a novel, right?
A very
popular novel.
That's right.
Was it a stage play, too?
I don't know whether it was or not. Something tells me in the back of my mind it was, but I'm not positive.
It was before my time, if it were. I do remember the movie with Will Rogers. Did you see that?
Yes, saw that.
That's on the television quite a bit.
Oh, yes, a lot, the late show. My father remembered that book. I mean, I remember the book from my father, who loved it very much and used to quote David Harum quite a bit.
He was a Cracker Barrel philosopher, they used to call him, from New England, right?
And horse trader.
Right, yeah.
A very smooth horse trader.
Very.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I enjoyed the picture very much. It was Will Rogers.
Will Rogers, yes.
And Stephen Fetchett, who I put in a book I wrote last year.
Oh.
And Evelyn Venable, who I understand is very ill.
Oh.
I'm sorry to say.
I didn't know that.
When did it go off the air?
Around 51, I think. About 51.
That would be one of the last of the soap operas then, probably, to go off.
Well, yes, it was. They were all going off about that time. And then I jumped right into TV, right from that.
I sort of remember David Harum. I would have listened to it in the Midwest around about what I call tea time, after 4 in the afternoon.
Oh.
Around there, just plain Bill. Was that the time it was carried to New York?
No, in New York, we went from various stations. We played at NBC and then CBS and back again. And it usually was a morning program here.
I always remember you in the late afternoon, so probably it was on a rebroadcast.
That might have been it, yeah.
Let's see, I'm looking at the other people who had played it. Wilbur Walter and Craig McDonald.
Oh, yes.
Do you know them? Are they around?
Not Wilbur Walter, but Craig McDonald I knew very well, yes.
We were looking at the cast list. Do you keep in touch with any of the people?
Charmaine Allen, who played Polly. We correspond, yes.
Do you consider yourself completely retired now?
Yes, I am. I unfortunately have some emphysema, and I can't work anymore.
When we get back to the studio, I'm going to take an album I have with all of the themes from the old radio programs, and I'll put Sunbonnet Sue.
Very good idea. Yeah, I remember it.
Well,
yeah.
I have it. I don't have the version which was Stanley Davis, I think it was. I wrote this down. Stanley Davis on the guitar. It said he was the same one who played Juanita for Helen Trent.
Oh, yes, yeah.
Was he in the studio live every day doing that?
No, he wasn't. No, mostly when I was on it, they played organ.
Oh.
That was organ, I can't think of his name at the moment. Charlie Paul, played the organ.
I always ask this of radio personalities. I did of Mop Perkins and of Just Plain Bill when he was on. Did you get letters from people asking you advice, thinking you were this sage philosopher?
Once in a while, yes. Uh-huh. Yeah, we'd get some strange letters. Bad. Particularly after, some exciting episode, and the problem was their problem. Want to know how to solve it.
You're one of the few actors I have a chance to interview that has played in, I suppose, every media. You were in the theater, motion pictures, television, and radio. Yeah. What's your favorite?
Theater, very definitely. Because you can grow in a part, in the theater. And the other mediums all, everybody says they have so much fun playing a part, so much fun. I never found it fun. I found it hard work. And you prepare a thing for TV, one shot. As everybody says, one fellow says, it's closing night. The first time you play it, it's closing night.
I never thought of that before.
It is. It's closing night. The first time you play it is closing night. We're at in the theater, like a Broadway opening. I've been to quite a number of them. You're so nervous you wish you're 1,000 miles away. But then you get playing, the nervousness disappears, you start building your character, building, and then it becomes a joy. Then it's fun. Then it's really fun.
Did you have any running parts on other radio programs that
no,
you might remember?
No.
No?
No, but no running parts, you know. Well, not any that endured, but some that would go 6 or 7 weeks, something like that. But one of my great experiences in radio was the Theater Guild on the Air.
It's my favorite radio
US
program.
Well, I played many of them, with most all the great movie actors. And one of my loveliest experiences was playing with Walter Houston in Noah Webster and the Devil. And I played Noah, and Walter played the Devil. And he was the most charming man that I have ever met in my life. And, of course, a great, great actor. And the mystery was, what made him great? You'd sit right next to him. He apparently was reading like he was reading a telephone directory, apparently putting nothing in it. Just nothing. It came over with the impact of a caterpillar. A terrific impact. Just a mystery to me. And at that time, we were playing this Noah Webster and the Devil. Walter was on his way to Hollywood. And we had a long conversation about his son, John, the director. And, he was so proud of that boy. And a friend of mine took a record, recording, a tape. And I have that tape. And Walter left. That was on a Sunday. Walter left. I read in the paper Wednesday. He died in Hollywood. That was the last thing he ever did.
Very, very fine actor.
Oh, and a gentleman. Lovely man.
He had that same quality on the stage, though, because if I were, had to describe to somebody who had never seen Walter Houston, what it was a special magic. I saw him. I think the last thing he did on the stage was Apple of His Eye, kind of a cute little play that he took on the road.
Yeah, uh-huh.
And he really had it, like when he sang September Song. He had no voice at all, and yet people still buy the record of it.
Well, I hear it every once in a while, and it's terrific, isn't it?
And he can't sing at all.
No, it's true. It's amazing. I had experience in New Girl in Town. I had 3 numbers, one with Thelma Ritter and one with Gwen Verdon, and then a solo. And the solo apparently had a great impact on the audience. And I think it was because I loved it so much, that it was more of I didn't really sing it. I was a dramatic interpretation of the thing.
What are some of the films you've done?
Well, lately Rainmaker and Back from Eternity.
From Here to Eternity?
No,
Back to Eternity.
Back from Eternity, I think, is the one with the. Can't think of his name at the moment. Very popular now. Who did The Pawnbroker?
Rod Steiger.
Rod Steiger. And Anita Ekberg. And, quite a cast we had there. Bob Ryan was in it. And then I did another one Power and the Pride with Burl Ives. And then I jumped way back into doing Abraham Lincoln with Walter Huston, directed by D.W. Griffiths. And that was way back in the 30s. I go back.
Yes, I saw that in a theater called the Hippodrome in Washington, D.C. It must have been about 1948. It was a revival then.
You were?
About mid-30s, wasn't it?
It was in the 30s. I think 30 was when it was done. I did the part of John Hay, the secretary, Lincoln's secretary. And then D.W. Griffith seemed to like me, and he kept putting me in different makeups. And he was using his cronies from the silent days, and sometimes they'd fall down on dialogue, couldn't do the dialogue. So I would have a set of whiskers or something on. He'd say, he couldn't pronounce my name. He said, "Where's Hay? Hey, come here, Hay." He'd say, "Go in and do that part." And I'd have to learn it right there while he waited. And I did three parts, I think, in the picture, but got screen credit for just the one part.
That was his, I suppose, his last major film.
That
really
was his last, yes. Yeah. That was the last one he ever did. He was a nice man, too. Very nice.
Yeah, a tremendous impact on motion pictures.
Oh, heavens, yes. I guess his innovations were, he began many of the things in pictures. The fade-out, I understand, and many things like that.
Well, even seeing some of the silent films now, Birth of a Nation, or Intolerance, they're
yes.
incredible films that they were made that long ago.
They were. They
I've
were.
Interviewed a number of the stars that have worked for him, Blanche Sweet and Carmel Myers,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, they all kind of mm-hmm. praise him too
yeah.
highly
mm-hmm.
for what he did. Also, Cecil B. DeMille.
The last picture I did was the Cardinal. That was in 63.
What part did you play in that?
Well, the
because
father.
I don't know when it came
father
out.
Father of the Cardinal. He was the railroad conductor,
oh, yes.
motor car conductor. That was the last picture I did.
We won't be coming back to New York anymore. Do you miss New York?
No.
No?
No, I don't. Well, look, I'm living in the forest.
Well,
there.
It's very pretty.
It's out there.
You're very rural for
well,
an actor.
I'm very rural, I'll tell you the truth. No, I'll tell you, if you're active in New York, like you are, that's the place to be. But if you retired, what have you got, you know? Unless you, if you're active in the theater as you are, it's stimulating. It's a stimulating city and wonderful. But I've had it. Face it, I had it. Years of it.
We had a very good career. Let me ask you then, do you miss acting?
Yes, I think so, yes. Yes, I think I'd love to act again if I could. That never gets out of your blood. It's a form of insanity, I think.
Do the young people around here recognize you from your motion pictures on television?
Yes, every once in a while they say, "I saw you in this, that, or the other."
What's your favorite of all the things you've done now?
Oh, in that is almost impossible. In parts in the theater, I would say Neri in The Jest, Lilium, these are all on the Pacific Coast, and I love the part of The Rainmaker very much, The Father. I would say that. Those are my favorite things.
I'll ask you a tough question now. I don't often ask this of actors, but you're retired, so I can't. What's the part that you've always wanted and no one's offered it to you? I asked that of Dame Judith Anderson, and she said she wanted to do Peter Pan.
I don't know. I couldn't answer that.
Did you get them all?
Oh, well, I'll tell you one I think I'd like to have done. Would be Iago.
Oh, in Othello.
Yes, in Othello.
Mm-hmm.
Iago. Well, somebody did ask me to do it. No, they didn't. They just suggested I do it. But no one asked me to do it. So I think that would have been a good part for me.
You wouldn't come out of retirement, though, to do it.
No, I couldn't. Another part I liked in the theater was Herod and Salome. I did that at the Greek Theater in Berkeley with Mimi Agulia, the Italian actress. Then I did it at the Curran Theater. That's a lovely part, the part of Herod.
When you have very long runs, and you've been in a number of them that you've mentioned, I've had actors tell me that if a play runs very long, very often there'll be several people in the cast who are tied down by a run-of-the-play contract and, I don't know, somehow sort of resent it and get very bored with the part, nervous, and people start fighting backstage and so forth. Did you find that?
Quite the opposite. I've heard this from actors, and I've never been able to understand it. If the part is worthwhile, I don't care if I played it a year. At the end of that year, I never felt I had it quite. I never felt I could go three acts and give three perfect acts. Maybe the second act might be good. First and last act wouldn't be so good. Last act might be good. One and two wouldn't be. So every night was a challenge to me. I never got bored. If there was anything in the part at all to work on, I never got bored.
Sure, you really love your work.
Well, I love a good part, too, and I love the theater and the technique of the theater and the emotional outlet. If you get a good part, you know, you let off all your steam. You don't go around shooting people.
Well, now you can fish.
Now I can fish, that's right.
I'm visiting today with Cameron Prudhomme, who was David Harum for so many years on radio and appeared on Broadway and in many motion pictures and television programs. You go back so far, since you're a man, I can ask you this. Ladies usually get nervous when you're talking about a number of years ago. But I wonder if you'd tell the audience a little bit about what it was to begin as an actor many years ago when they had tent shows, they had traveling shows, repertory. I think of many things that outlets for actors that they really don't have today. You had very good training, I would think.
Yes, I did have. It's pretty hard to say how I got started. I took lessons with Hedwiga Reicher. She was a famous European actress, excuse me, and starred under Sam Harris in the early years of this century. She was a classic actress. I worked with her, and we staged poetry, as we'd have a set and costumes, and in a small way in San Francisco and Berkeley, California, and around the country, we would stage our poetry. And she had really came from the Stanislavski school. Her father was a famous German actor. And that was my first training. And then someone saw me in one of those things in the little theater movement and asked me to come and play. And it was more than an amateur organization, this particular group. There were professionals in it, people who had retired, people who were just waiting for a chance, for instance, like Guy Kibbe was one I played with in that company. And from there, I was invited into the professional theater. Henry Duffy then had 8 theaters on the Pacific Coast. And I was invited to play in the show off with Lou Bartels, the man who created the part, at the Alcazar Theater. So I was invited into the professional theater. And then I started with him. And he had theaters all over the coast. And he had 2, 3 in Hollywood, Los Angeles. And then he had 2, 1 in San Francisco and 1 in Oakland. And I spent something like 4 years with him, playing with many Broadway shows with Broadway actors and Broadway direction. So that's how I got my training, really.
Well, now that was pre-Equity days. Did you ever get stranded
No, Equity was operating then.
Oh, really?
No, I never really played in the sticks very much, except some stock engagements in Sacramento, California, and Salt Lake City.
I was going to ask you if you ever got stranded, you know, in Montana or North Dakota.
No, I never did. I was pretty crafty. I saw that I got my money and my traveling expenses. That was the business training I had before I went in the theater, I guess.
Let me ask you something. I don't know if you've ever played it, but you must know the expression. And someone asked me the other day, with a kid, as a matter of fact, what it meant. And I really couldn't explain it to him, although I think I know. What was the Chautauqua circuit?
Originally before my time, and I have no knowledge of it except for what I've read. It was sort of an outdoor circus, wasn't it?
I think so, yes. Yeah, they had the animals and the...
Well, I meant by that they had sketches and monologues and lectures. And I think that's what it was, but I know nothing about it.
Yeah, I think
that.
Many times it had a religious theme. It was sort of like vaudeville and a carnival combined.
I think it was like...
Well, it probably became vaudeville.
It was sheer entertainment for a rural population, wasn't it? I mean, something of that sort.
Mm.
Like the Toby Show, which you hear so much about.
No, I'm sorry, I don't know that. What was that?
You don't know the Toby Show?
No. No.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I've never been in them, but they still exist in the Midwest. You're from the Midwest?
Yes, I am.
Gracious. Well, as I understand it, that's the show where the leading man is sort of a boob, a clown. And he wears a red wig or a fright wig or something, and maybe baggy pants and a funny get-up. And he's a boob, and he always comes in and lifts the mortgage or rescues the heroine or does something. And they just go into small towns in the Midwest from one town to another, and they're called Toby Shows.
Isn't that funny? Now, I didn't know the name.
Amazing.
Yeah, well, I'm not from a small town. Of course, that might be the reason I'm from Detroit.
Oh, well, now, listen. Yeah, that's cosmopolitan.
Sure, I was thinking Ina Claire and things.
It's more in the, I think, in through, like, Kansas and Iowa, the farming belt is where they operate. And I understand they still operate today. And they look forward to it. They come every year to the same towns.
The Toby Show, isn't that?
That's the name of it.
T-O-B-Y.
T-O-B-Y. And the central character, as I say, was sort of a yokel, you know? Not a boob, necessarily. I've never seen one, but I've seen parts of them on TV and one thing and another. And they're just yokels that stumble along and bumble along and became the heroes.
They
were very clean shows.
I'm trying to think of the name of the actor who would fit that part that you're describing. He made a million movies, and I can't think of his name.
I know exactly who you mean. Was he a Swedish? Was that the one?
You're thinking of El Brendel.
Yes, I think of El Brendel.
No, well, yes, he would, but there was another one. He made a lot of movies in the late 30s. He's still around. Stu Irwin, right. Yeah, my driver's saying Stu Irwin. Yeah.
That might be a very good hit, yes.
He made many movies like that.
I remember.
Today.
Yes, he did. I remember when I was a kid that they used to travel through the rural districts, the Swedish shows. Jan Jansson, Ole Olsen. That was a type of Toby Show. The hero was a Swedish, used a Swedish accent. And the villain would get the girl on the sawmill, you know, and just to, she used to be cut in half or tied on the railroad tracks, he would rush in and save the girl.
Well, now we laugh at that sort of thing, but at the time, was it really very suspenseful?
Oh, yes.
You were scared.
Oh, with a kid sit in a theater and shake, you know, really, it was something. And they Jan Jansson, Ole Olsen, all those Swedish names. This was something like the Toby Show.
Well, they had a lot of those situations, like you just described, in the early Silence.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they were always
sure.
Tying one of the mixed Senate girls to...
Well, they got that from the old theater. That's where they got it.
Would you have great crushes on the early Silence stars?
Oh, yes.
You
sure.
Did?
Yeah.
Who were your favorites?
I wouldn't say Mae West. Because I still love Mae West. I think she's just marvelous. Mae Bush.
Mae Marsh?
Mae? No, she died in New York not so long ago.
Well, Mae Bush is dead, and Mae Clark is still living. Mm-hmm. Mae Marsh is alive.
Maybe it wasn't Mae. I can't think of her at the moment. Well, I had many crushes. I was really fickle.
Were you a movie fan?
Yes, very much so.
Silence?
Yes.
Even when you were acting? Because actors...
No,
at that time...
this is before.
Oh.
Yeah. Before.
Were actors inclined to look down on people who did silent films? Because very few of the
big ones
did. Well,
I went into the theater after the, really after the silent film day. And, of course, we never looked down on it.
Well, I think we started talking about David Harum. I can't think of anything else to ask you about him to wind up with, because that was the excuse to come over and visit you. Is there something else you'd like to say about David Harum?
Well, may he rest in peace.
Did he die at the end? How did they wind
no.
it up?
Oh, they just wind it up by quitting, you know.
Some of them just stopped right in the middle of an episode, they told me.
No, I think we finished the episode all right. But after that, it just was no more. That was it.
Did they leave you with the feeling it might come back? Because a lot
no.
of them felt no.
No, the handwriting was on the wall. You could see that the TV was there. And from David Harum, as I say, I plunged right into TV. I had been out of the theater for so many years. I was frightened about learning lines and everything. So I thought, oh, I'll just start very easily. Just get my feet wet. And the first thing I know, I think his name was Magnus Marner, something like that, wanted me to do a thing with Walter Hampton for the AMA, American Medical Association. And it was quite a long part, and I said, oh, no, I'm not going to do that. And he insisted I do it with Walter Hampton. And I did it, and it was a long part, but a very good part. Walter was the doctor. He had 13 scenes, and he was trying to get a hospital for this community. And I was the preacher in town. And my first experience with TV, in the middle of my great speech, the big speech I had a lot of speeches, the audience got up out of their seats and crawled away with their heads down and their backs bowed so as to get out of the way of the camera, which is back right in the middle of my speech, because they had to get to another scene. This is the days of live television before tape. But out of that one appearance, I had 9 calls for TV within a week. And I was right up to my eyes in it. In 1 week, I was just right up there, and I stayed there.
Did you like it?
No.
Frantic media.
No, it was terrible. Yeah. This was live television I was in, you know.
The toughest. Yeah.
Oh, it was terrible before tape, you know. I did 48 shows in 46 weeks.
Well, no wonder.
Live television.
No wonder you're retired. You've earned your fishing.
I used to type my part on cards and keep it in my pocket. And I have had as high as 3 parts in my pockets at a time. I mean, I pass you right on the street and never know you. Just thinking of these parts. Oh, that was something.
I've been visiting today, way in the wilds of New Jersey, but it's very pretty, with Mr. Cameron Prudhomme. Did I pronounce that correctly?
Oh, that's as close.
Come on, say it right.
Well, I say Prudhomme. A Frenchman really explodes it. He says, Prudhomme, or something like that.
Well, it's a pretty name.
You were very close.
Thank you, thank you. Who was David Harum, and many other things. It's been very enjoyable talking with him today.
Well, I've enjoyed it, too.
I think we have some very interesting programs for you in the next few weeks. I'll tell you a little bit about them. Our first sports figure, lady by the name of Gertrude Augusta Moran. She's probably better remembered as Gorgeous Gussie, one of the most colorful tennis players this country has ever produced, will be visiting with us here. And then from radio, we have the cast of the program Jungle Jim that was heard 5 days a week for so many years. Matt Crowley played the title role, and Vicky Vola was the notorious Shanghai Lil. We'll not only have both of those, but the announcer as well. And from motion pictures, a lady so many of you have written in about, asked where she was and what she was doing, and she'll be here to tell you about it very shortly. Her name is Diana Foster, and she starred in the 1930s and early 40s in films as Magic and Music and Phantom of the Opera. And then what I think is a particularly interesting program, we're going to let it run for a full hour. I went to Washington recently and recorded the very colorful senator from Montana, Burton K. Wheeler. He ran in 1924 with Robert La Follette on the Progressive Party platform. And then he changed Democrat, but was a very independent Democrat throughout the 30s. He was a very bitter foe of Mr. Roosevelt's court packing plan, and also the NRA. So that's a few previews of coming attractions. And until next week at the same time, this is Richard Lamparski. Thank you for listening. Good night.
Whatever Became Of with Richard Lamparski was recorded